Welcome to the talk show dedicated to the wine industry. It's All About Wine. With your host, winemaker, cellar master, vineyardist, and tasting expert, Ron, Vice President and General Manager of Florida State's Winery in Land O'Lakes, Florida. Call our guest line at any time during the live show at area code 646-727-3235.
Basically, what we're trying to do on this program is educate people and make wine less confusing and more friendly.
Broadcasting on blogtalkradio.com from coast to coast.
Basser, Kansas.
Deming, New Mexico.
Ithaca, New York.
Knoxville.
Lancaster County, Pennsylvania.
Lexington, Kentucky.
Montana.
Moscow, Idaho.
New Hampshire.
New Mexico.
Santa Rosa.
Sevierville, Tennessee.
South Dakota.
The coast of Maine.
The Commonwealth of Pennsylvania.
Westport, Mass.
You know, we really have had some neat people on the program. I love that. Alba Vineyards.
Blog.10Live.
Boy Flip Winery.
Brotherhood.
Camas Prairie Winery.
Candia Vineyards.
Hello, the Borgeses.
Eagle Springs Winery.
Flathead Lake Winery.
Free the Grapes.
Grapesandwine.cal.cornell.edu.
Heritage Vineyards and Winery.
Hershey Harrisburg Wine Country.
Holy Field Vineyard and Winery.
Hummingbird Ridge Winery.
Joy Soy of Wine.
Prairie Berry.
Rainborn Wines.
Rocky Top Wine Trail.
Sheila Lauer, the Houston Winery.
Southwest Wine.
Haber Hill.
Ten Spoon.
University of Kentucky Extension.
Vineyard at Hershey.
Vibach Winery.
Walt Vineyard.
Westport Rivers.
Wine Flower.
And around the world.
TheDriftingWinemaker.com. I just arrived in Bali about 3 days ago.
All About Wine is on.
If you have any questions or anything to talk about, we will be more than happy to talk to you about or search it for you or try to find information for you out there, because there is a lot of information out there about wine.
We do occasionally get off topic.
Belvoir Winery.
The most well-known haunted winery in the Midwest.
I've heard voices at the winery.
Call area code 646-727-3235 and let's talk about wine on air. And now, wine enthusiast and industry representatives, All About Wine is on. Here is your host, Ron.
They're all happy out there. We have beautiful weather here. It's warm, but it's Florida and it's summer and it's warm. I mean, that goes with the territory. No rain today. It's, well, I shouldn't say that. Different areas, different rains, all that. Again, it's summer, it's Florida, and we get rains in the afternoon, sometimes morning and all that. It's tropics. That's what we expect. Thank you for joining us. If you are listening on the 9th of July at 7:03 in the evening, Eastern Time, you're live. And so thanks for tuning in. If you are listening live, you can give me a call if you have any questions, want to talk about anything, 646-727-3235. And I'll put you in the green room, go and talk to you for a second and bring you on the air. Simple as that. Try to keep the subjects on wine. This is All About Wine. So, but happy to get a call from you. If you're not listening live and you're listening on archives, thanks for checking us out and staying with us. We do appreciate that. We got a few subjects to cover tonight, a few odds and ends and things like that. I say this every time. I don't think I'll cover the hour, but then I end up covering the hour. But if I don't, I don't. So, sorry. No Mike again tonight. He's doing his day job. Tied up on that, and so he's not with us, so you're gonna have to listen to me, which you usually do anyway, because Mike usually stays in the background and tweets the entire show and keeps up on information, which I greatly appreciate. First thing, a little bit off the subject here of wine, but I gotta tell you about this. Lowry Park Zoo, this is Tampa's zoo, is located down on West Sly Avenue in Tampa. Lowry Park Zoo, coming up on Saturday, August the 1st. That is, today's the 9th, so it'll be 3 weeks from this coming Saturday evening. 3 weeks from Saturday at 7:30 to 10:30 in the evening. They're having Wazoo, W-A-Z-O-O, Wazoo. It is a beer fest. And I know we're all about wine, but I could tell you about this. It's a beer fest. Tampa Lowry Park Zoo's 20th annual beer fest features over 275 brews, food, and live music throughout the zoo. Proceeds support animal care and global conservation initiatives. A great cause, people, by the way. It really is a great cause. And it is also one of the, according to USA Today, one of the country's 10 great beer fests. So it's right on up there. It's a great event. You get to wander around the zoo. You get to drink beers and try beers. They have food. They have different stations, different musicians and all that. I've been to it a couple times over the years, and it is fantastic. All-inclusive tickets start at $60 for an early bird discount. Group discounts provided for 20 tickets or more. VIP tickets are also available for the Blue Moon Beastly Beverage Club, which features events that start early at 6:30, not 7:30. So, all great, all for good cause, all for benefits, Lowry Park Zoo and other animal initiatives. If you are interested, and I'll give you this number a couple times here, so if you have a pen, 813-935-8552. And the extension is 392. Or you can contact Lowry Park Zoo, L-O-W-R-Y, Lowry, or Lowry, you might read it, but it's actually pronounced Lowry Park Zoo, L-O-W-R-Y, parkzoo.org, /Wazoo, W-A-Z-O-O. Again, 813-935-8552, extension 392, or go online, lowryparkzoo.org, /Wazoo. Great event and a lot of fun and just really rain or shine. So drink beer and support wildlife. I can't think of a, I can. If it were wine and wildlife, that would be better. But still, though, they've got some great wine, or great beers there and a lot of fun and a great event. So I wanted to pass that on to you. I got my invitation. I wanted to share it with anyone who is going to be in Tampa or is making a trip to Tampa the 1st of August. Put that on your itinerary. Few things to talk about tonight. Just some odds and ends subjects here that are always a lot of fun and always interesting and always good for knowledge. And so we'll start out with Texas. Texas is getting some serious rains. You may have noticed, or if anybody in Texas may have noticed that. But they are really, really getting smacked with a lot of rains, as is other areas. I'll also comment on that in a little bit here. But an article here in the Palestine Herald Press, this is dated the 26th of May, but the Palestine Herald Press is talking about the Texas wineries. And I think I mentioned something about this a little bit last week, but the different wineries, some of them are saying they can lose their whole crop. They're getting 5 inches of rain over the weekend in some of the areas. Some yellowing of the leaves, which, you know, could be roots rotting. I lost my entire vineyards 11 years ago because of the hurricanes that went through here in Florida around Tampa. Four hurricanes in 8 weeks drowned my vineyard, and they were young though. They weren't established. But if there are older vineyards, then they can sometimes withstand the weather. But the hill country is having some serious problems. Over 5 dozen different wineries in the hill country, and all of them are starting to see water rise in the creeks and affecting a lot of the area around there. I called some Texas wineries over the past week, and most of them said that they're not having too much of a problem. They said that pumps are keeping up with it in the vineyards. The grapes are established. They're having wet grounds and stuff, but it's not to the point where they're not harvesting. They're not worrying about any of that because it's too early in the season to really be into worry about harvesting and or anything where they'd have to be out there all the time. They are keeping an eye on the water that's my computer just did something weird. They are keeping an eye on the water, but it's not basically the ones I talked to said that they're in pretty good shape. When the ground gets so wet, there's no oxygen in the soil, and actually the plants die, and it also creates a lot of diseases and stuff like that. So that is one of the things that they are concerned about continuously there. But overall, I contacted a few wineries, and overall, most of them were pretty satisfied with how things are going right now. Now, another article here, this is also from Montgomery County Courier in Montgomery County, and this is talking about the rains here that hit Texas Bluebonnet Wine Trail celebrating their harvest. They said the wine harvest during the second and third weekends in July have participating wineries that are doing all right, and they're not too concerned about the rains and the wet grounds. Everything seems to be okay. All the things that were scheduled for the 4th of July weekend went on without a hitch. Some of the wineries said that it was nice because it was so wet, they didn't have to worry about fireworks causing any problems or anything. But the biggest area that they're saying is along the coast, the Texas coast, along the Gulf of Mexico. A lot of rains are coming in off the coast. Certain hybrid grapes are doing well in that area, and because they can tolerate some of the Texas humidities and temperatures and Pierce disease and stuff like that. The hybrid grapes are, though, very susceptible to black rot, powdery mildew, and downy mildew. And with all the moisture that's going in there, they're constantly checking for that and constantly trying to find out if all that is causing any more problems. It's the tractors haven't been able to get out into the fields because they're so wet. So what they use, the sulfur compounds that are used to combat these powdery mildew, downy mildew, black rot, and all that. They spread sulfur compounds, and it's becoming almost impossible for the tractors to get out there and do this. And so some of the vineyards have been severely impacted because of that. The article says that there's been some total vineyards that have been affected by the black rot, which is blacking the grapes and shriveling them up and all that. But mostly, overall, they're doing well. There are a few here and there. And the ones I talked to, nobody said that they were affected any seriously. I didn't call anybody on the coast, and I tried, hill country and different places like that. I didn't get a hold of any wineries on the coast. The harvest should be coming up pretty soon here. And, the start of some of the harvests are going to be in, middle of July, end of July. So within the next couple of weeks or so, they should start seeing what's going to happen, how things are going to be affected and all that. So as it stands right now, Texas is some are being affected, but it's not something that is completely severe. I mean, every time you have loss of any grapevines and you're a winery, that is severe and that is, it's going to impact you. But overall, it looks like that they're not, it's not really critical. So keep you posted. I'll let you know. I'll talk to some more Texas wineries and I'll call someone along the coast and see what they have to say. But as of right now, overall, it looks good in Texas with the rains and all the flooding and everything. The advent of plastic bottles. We are getting them. They're starting to pop up here and there. We talked about bottles last week and about the different types of bottles and everything. Boxes and cans that are out there. Now they're starting to come up with PET bottles, plastic bottles, PET, the polyethylene terephthalate. Is that what it's pronounced? I don't know. Plastic wine bottles. Same type as used in your 2-liter soda that you buy at the store. Plastic allows more oxygen to pass through the bottle than does glass, which will result in faster storage. But people drink their wine so fast, so this may not be an issue. If people can accept boxes and cans, then plastic is there. Now, as far as wineries go, this could be a boom as far as bottling goes. Less breakage, actually be almost zero breakage. You're not going to break a plastic. Shipping cost is negligible compared to a wine bottle. A case of wine in a bottle runs 36 pounds, and that's just a regular 750 12 bottle case. Runs about 36 pounds. Plastic is over half that. Also, plastic is better for the environment. You can recycle the plastic and BPA free. But, you know, I mean, plastic wine bottles, it's something that it's, well, a little bit hard to get used to, I think. Although it's becoming, it's there. For wine drinkers started to use glass, there was all sorts of different things that were used, and it's, you know, what people got used to everything else, goat skin, and you know, I mean, every time it switched over, people were resistant to it, and now the plastic might be something that people are saying, wait a minute, this is something that might be good now, especially in the fact that we got canned wine and boxed wine and screw caps, why not plastic? So, and Irene King, my conscience out there for many stuff, plastic bottles, what do you think? Plastic poses some health threats, which might be a problem. They could leach into the wine. Chemicals. I mean, you know, plastic is made from oils and chemicals. So if you're starting to get some plastic leaching into the wine, but we use plastic in all sorts of other stuff, and we don't seem to be really concerned about that. Although, you know, the article that I read about plastic bottles said it could be no different than breathing polluted air. All the stuff that we're breathing included air. But no one thinks twice about having a plastic bottle for their Sprite or 7-Up or Pepsi or Coke. So, I don't know. The wine industry is always evolving. And PET plastic bottles will reduce waste and cost on both ends for the consumer and for the producers. You know, instead of paying for a bottle, you're paying for plastic and the little screw cap plastic. You know, think you're, you know, instead of a 2-liter bottle of soda, then you pick yourself up a 750 milliliter of your favorite cab or Merlot or Riesling. I mean, our Chardonnay, there you know, it's simple and easy. I don't know. It's something that is a possibility. It's something we see in the future. Plastic bottles have already been out there. I know of some that have been possibly taken on the market and stuff already. I've looked at it myself in the past, and tell you, it's tempting. The cost all the way around, the cost factor is so much better. And I say that simply because it's, you know, especially as a small winery, watching cost all the time makes a big difference. So I don't know. There you go. There's something else to debate. Plastic bottles. Are we going to have them? Are we not going to have them? Are they going to be coming out? Would you buy a wine in the plastic bottles? Would you buy in a can? Would you buy, a box? Well, yeah, people are buying a box. So, you know, why not everything else? So I don't know. It's something that, like I say, it's ever evolving, and it's in the wine industry is stuff that we are constantly looking at. Napa is, where did I see this? I have it right here. I know I do. It should be right here. Yeah. There it is. Verizon has started in Napa, which is basically the time when, where it is, yeah. The wine grapes growing season is underway, occurring 2 to 3 weeks earlier than usual this year in Napa. Verizon is the onset of ripening of the grapes, marks the colorful transition, if you will, from grape growth to grape ripening. It starts getting, pulling in red wine grapes, slowly turn from the green to the red and purples, and white wine grapes go from green to the golden yellowish color and all that. And Verizon usually happens toward the end of July in Napa, and it's happening now. A lot of vineyards there are reporting that Verizon is happening, and it's way early, 2 to 3 weeks early. Grapes that Petit Syrah, Sangiovese are showing signs of Verizon, and they expect full color within the next 10 days or so. Harvest typically occurs 60 to 75 days from Verizon. And so you're 2 months from now, if it's the middle of July, you're looking at the middle of September to end of September for harvest, which is a little bit early, a couple, 3 weeks early out there. So I don't know how much it's going to affect the grapes. We'll see. We'll give it the benefit of the doubt that it's just something that's happening. Maybe because of the drought out there might be the cause of it. I don't know. It doesn't say on the articles I read. I saw a couple of articles on it, but doesn't say why or anything. Says this time of year the growth is strong in the wine grapes, and if leaf canopies are managed properly, it prevents sunburn and gives minimize the weeds and the pests and holds the moisture in the soil. So I don't know. We'll see. We'll see what happens. But Verizon has already started, and that caught my eye simply because it was like 3 weeks early. That is a big difference on than average. Okay, let's this here, and here's something I want to talk about. Door-to-door wine shipment bill passes in the Pennsylvania Senate. Now, Pennsylvania, as you may or may not know, is very sticky on their wine sales. They have their state stores, and these state stores are well, we've talked to some wineries about state stores in Pennsylvania. Listen to some of the past episodes, and you'll be shocked at some of the silly, if you will, rules that they have about wine and wine sales in that state. But the state Senate voted 31-18 a week ago Wednesday, to pass a bill designed to let Pennsylvanians receive direct-to-the-door wine shipments. Oh my gosh, the world is ending. But the bill now goes back to the state house for final consideration. The Senate Democrats actually opposed the bill, arguing that its annual purchase limits may be too high, and it would be better for the state to amend its wine shipping laws in the context of fuller discussion of liquor reforms. You know, separating people, separating. They're not the same. Governor Tom Wolf is known to have concerns about the proposed $1 per gallon excise tax rate on the mail order purchases that he believes is too low. $1 per gallon. Now, a gallon, a case of wine is 2.37 gallons. So you're two and a third gallons, say, round it down for a case. So that'd be $2.33 for a case of excise tax. He wants it more than that. Direct shipment is a convenience issue. For those who support it, say they want to make it easier for fine wines they like during a trip, and they can may not be stocked in the state-owned stores, which helps a lot of the smaller wineries. And we've talked to some of the wineries there. They said that, you know, they don't have their wines in the state stores. Some of them do, and it's good, but not all of them have that, which is, you know, hurts those smaller wineries. And said this way they can get a case or two shipped to their home from those wineries. They're also arguing that Pennsylvania needs to fix its laws. Yes, they do. They struck down a ruling several years ago over the unequal treatment of in-state and out-of-state wineries. Whether state-owned liquor stores are privatized or not, the new law customers can purchase up to 36 cases per year from any individual winery. Wow, that's a lot. They said that is liberal enough to cover all forms of personal use. 36 cases, I would think so. Participating wineries will be required to verify the age of the buyer in a manner approved by the Pennsylvania Liquor Control Board, collect and remit the applicable taxes to the state, clearly label shipped packages as containing alcohol, and have it signed for on site by someone who is over 21. When you ship package wine by UPS or FedEx, they have a little form that says, I certify I'm over 21, just have them sign it. Notes that the shipment rules would generate about $1.3 million in new state taxes yearly to start with. But the report also notes, and here you go, may likely be outweighed by companion change reducing statutory price markups for special product orders placed by bars and restaurants that would then cut into the Pennsylvania Liquor Control Board. They're afraid that they're going to circumvent the Liquor Control Board instead of bars and restaurants going to the PLCB, ordering their wines. They will just have it shipped to the owner of the bar and 32 cases a year. Wow. That would cover just about any wines that you're going to be selling at some of these bars and restaurants. So, and that's our 36 cases per year from any individual winery. So that would cover a lot of it. I can see their concern on that aspect of it. But still, hey, Pennsylvania passes the Senate. Now it goes before the House, and let's see what the House does with it. I'll try to keep you. If I can catch the news on that, I'll try to keep you informed of what's happening with that. Or we can always call our friend at freethegrapes.org. By the way, I haven't mentioned that in some time. Freethegrapes.org. If you're not signed up for that, do so. Freethegrapes.org. It is a great organization. They're located in California. They have a mission to get grapes able to ship around the country. Aren't grapes. Wine being able to ship around the country with no restrictions and stuff. They are battling it. Great website, great information on there. And so check it out, freethegrapes.org. You can subscribe to their emails and all, though, or they're on Facebook and all that good stuff. So check that out. But, you know, yay, Pennsylvania for that. Let's see what happens on that. That could be interesting developments in that. Here's something that's caught my eye. We talked about screw caps, and we've talked about porks, and we've talked about all sorts of different stuff before. And this is from the Globe and Mail. It is, the Globe and Mail is, I have no idea from where. I think it's Canadian, newspaper. But let me see at the bottom here if it says anything. Yes, Toronto. The Globe and Mail is Toronto, Ontario, Canada publication. Philip Crowley, publisher. But the Globe and Mail newspaper is in Toronto. The question asks, can a screw cap wine be corked? The answer, and the person who answers this is that the name, or is that the person who asked the question? Nope, that's the name. Bippi, B-E-P-P-I, Crossorial, C-R-O. O-S-A-R-I-O-L, BP Presorial, is the Wine and Spirits, puts out a Wine and Spirits newsletter and the Globe and Mail and all that stuff. And BP, I would think, is a woman. Answer, yes, it can, though it depends on how strictly you define the term corked. Well, this wouldn't be cork, but it could be, because cork is always referred to as that. Contrary to almost universal belief, screw cap wines are indeed susceptible to the sort of moldy off aromas typically associated with contaminated corks. The main source of cork taint is a randomly occurring chemical called 2,4-6 tricornosyl, or TCA, is usually produced when a fungus resident natural cork bark comes in contact with chlorine, either during the bleaching process or when rainwater soaks into stacks to dry in the sun. It's powerful stuff and completely invisible to the eye, not to be confused with corks that are merely brittle or broken. She says that TCA usually occurs in 2 to 3 bottles in 100, about, you know, 2%, 3%. That's about the average that's considered. Very low concentrations can be detected. TCA usually robs wines of its fruity character. But it says the main reason many producers of fine wine have moved to screw caps is because of TCA, to get away from it. But there are other similarly moldy contaminants closely related to TCA that have been found in screw cap wines. One of them is 2,4-6 tribromosol, or TBA, which has been linked to certain fungicides and wood preservatives used in the packaging industry. TBA can settle on various materials such as wooden barrels, styrofoam, cellar walls, and wooden pallets. From there, it can migrate to polyethylene film, a plastic commonly used in screw cap liners. Oh boy, there we go. She says, I sample a lot of wine each year and can attest to the reality of the occasional corked screw screw cap wine, as can many of my wine writing colleagues. But I hasten to add that your chances of coming across such a dud is far, far lower than in the case with wine sealed under cork. So there you go. I'm going to have to get a hold of her. Does she have an email address? That would be fun to get her on the show and talk with her. Maybe I can contact the paper and find out. You know, they have contact information here, so that might be worth fun. Okay, so there you go. The word is out. Corked wines can be found in screw caps. Another reason why screw caps might not be the save-all that everyone was fearing, although it's lower percentage, but still, it might not be the save-all that everyone was hoping for. Okay. This next one here, since we're talking about screw caps and corked wines, the race for screw cap and cork. And this is just another article on the debate. The Wine Economist. It is the Wine Economist is Mike Zesic, an editor of the Wine Economist and author of many books, including Wine Wars, Extreme Wine, Money, Taste in Wine, It's Complicated, which is a new one just coming out. He writes that it's the wealth of closures, choice closures, is phenomenal. And so, you know, screw cap has its place. Not always the best. Wine Business Monthly did a big article on the different closures. You have the Zork cork. You have the Vinyl Seal. The newest one is the Helix, which is looks like a bar top, a screw cork closure called a Helix. Screw cork, if you will. It's just twisted off. It's cork, and it's press cork, but you twist it off. And it slides in and out of the bottle, just like, you know, the bar tops and stuff. So the ongoing debate, here we go again. We're back to this. And, you know, this I'm going to have to get a hold of him, too. There's somebody else I need to contact and see if he might be on the program. But this is, I don't know, the continuing debate on this. The thing is, you know, if I'm going to drink a bottle of wine, or if I'm going to age a bottle of wine, if I'm going to spend money on a bottle of wine that I'm going to age, you know, $60, $70, $80, and I want to age it for, you know, 5-6 years, I want a cork in it. If I'm going to drink it, I'm going to go to the store and have something, take to friends or sit down to dinner or something, I don't think I would really care what the closure is as long as the wine itself presents itself to me what I expect and what I want in that wine. You know, and sorry, Irene, I know you listen to the program and you're probably going, what? But, you know, it's just the closures, if you're going to drink it right now, I think are rather insignificant. And most wines are drank now. So, I don't know. Let me get a hold of this guy here. Maybe we can get him on the show and talk to him about that. Go back here to another article, and we will talk even more about the screw cap issue or screw top issue, I'm sure, over the years and all that. Every year, Spain was a big event. Over 9,000 people attend their Battle of Wine. White shirts, t-shirts, whatever, are required. It is enormous event. It's held in the city of Batalla del Vino. Oh no, that's the Battle of Wine in Spain, the rebel region of Spain. And let's see, does it give some great pictures here on this, but I'm not seeing the actual name of the town that it's in. The Festival Battle of Wine. Widely known as the Wine Fight, the annual celebration of St. Peter's Day descends into vino-soaked madness. La Battella del Vino has been held annually for more than 300 years. Here you go, in Haro, H-A-R-O, Haro, Spain. The festival is in the Rojo region, and it begins with a mass on a mountaintop before it descends into the wine-soaked battle. About 1,000 liters of wine is transported to the cliffs of Bilbao, where white clothes are turned blood red. And it's just, it's an enormous event, enormous celebration. Residents of the town of Haro and an increasing number of tourists of all ages carry water pistols and all manners of vessels for wine, including buckets and jugs and backpacks mounted with hoses and these monster squirt guns and all this stuff. The things you use for spraying weeds or putting out fires, all this is used to squirt wine on people, red wine. And people are soaked. You wear white and it turns you into this enormous big purple mess of wine. What a waste. What a sad way. What a sad thing to do with wine, you know? I mean, really. but it looks like fun. There's a whole bunch of pictures here. If you want to check out the pictures, let me give you the website here. You can check out the pictures. And it really is, looks like a lot of fun event. But, you know, come on. You know, what a waste of wine. Let's see, the website, go to the dailymail.com, dailymail.com, it's British newspaper, Australian, no, British, UK. The website is www.dailymail.co.uk. And I'm sure you can just type in Battle of Wine, Spanish Battle of Wine, and you'll transfer you to the pictures. It was July the 9th, Thursday, July the 9th, which is actually today. Wow. It has all the pictures in it and everything. So check that out. Obviously, this was published on the 29th of June. So the pictures were... But a lot of fun, and what a tremendous waste of wine, I'll tell you. So, but check out the picture on that. That is, looks like a fun thing there. And, let's see. This next one, the 30th. Oh, we've been talking about the heat wave so much and about the drought in California, and they're also having heat and drought in Washington State, some high heat in Washington State. It's something that they are concerned, and they're trying to protect their grapes. Verizon is not far off, and the high heat could cause problems with the grapevines. Irrigation is a big problem. And watching the workers, too, is a big problem. It's almost impossible because the water situation is getting critical in the Washington area. Some of the grapes that are exposed to sunlight, the vines are shutting down. And some of the young grapes and some of the Cabernet Franc are dehydrating, turning to powder and falling off the vines. Some of these wineries are losing 15-20% of their crop. Walla Walla Valley is too high. The heat is too high, and it's not maturing the grapes properly. They can't function with it. And it is becoming an issue, a major issue. Some Tim's Vineyards in the Red Mountain area in eastern Yakima Valley is becoming an issue with the heat. They're having to spray waters on it and try to do what they can to keep the grapes hydrated and keep the plants hydrated. And so it's an issue. We'll keep an eye on this and see. Maybe we can call up there and find out something from one of the wineries there. But it's as critical as frost is in the winter in areas for citrus crops and stuff. The heat in the summer is causing a problem too. So an issue that needs to be watched and addressed there. Let's see, there's something else here. Where is this? Trader Joe's. Everybody knows Trader Joe's. $3 now, I think it is. It's up to $3. But it might still be $2. Somebody said it was up to $3. But this article here is entitled, "The Real Reasons Trader Joe's Wines is So Cheap." Okay. A bottle of the grocery store's most popular wine brand, Charles Shaw, sells for less than $3, $2.99. Also known as $2, Charles Shaw wines come in multiple red and white varieties, including Cabernet Sauvignon, Chardonnay, and Merlot. The wine's low prices attracted some criticism. Critics have called it undrinkable and sugar water. A wine shop owner once publicly accused the company that makes Charles Shaw's wine, which is Bronco wine, of failing to remove dead birds, leaves, insects, and rodents from its grape harvest. Bronco obviously has denied all the allegations of that. And despite the criticism, the wine is still as popular as ever, exceeding 800 million bottles since the wine debuted at $1.99 in 2002. $800 million at $2. So how does the company do this? Here we go. One, Bronco wine has cheap real estate costs. Most of the country's vineyards are located in California's San Joaquin Valley, where the cost of land is much cheaper than the more prestigious Sonoma or Napa or any of the others. Higher average temperatures in San Joaquin Valley can over-ripen grapes, which is a main contributor to the price difference between the regions. You got to watch the heat, like we just talked. The heat, grapes grow abundantly and harvest can be huge, but the flip side is they don't have a lot of quality. Too much heat reduces the quality of it, so you start losing the quality. The company, number two, the company ferments wine with oak chips, which are cheaper than barrels, which, you know, is fine. A lot of wineries do that. Most of the wine is fermented in oak barrels. Oak improves the taste of wine, but also the price tag. Bronco continues aging wines in oak, but uses less expensive forms of it. oak chips, oak blocks, oak dust, and also American oak, which is less expensive than the French oak. The company also uses one of the cheapest forms of natural cork. Okay, which of course they will. This says it's a mold of cork pieces glued together with a real cork veneer at the bottom, the report says. Well, this is just, you know, it's available to a lot of people in a lot of places and all that. And it's just a, well, I can't think of the name of it right now. I'm sorry. No, there's a name for it, not composite. My engineer just threw out composite, but no, there's an amalgamated, I want to say. I think amalgamated is what they call it. Bronco could cut costs even more by using plastic cork, which is what most wines under $10. Plastic's not that whole lot cheaper, though. Frangia believes a plastic cork would affect the taste of wine, potentially cheapen customers' perception of Charles Saul. So he used the low-cost natural cork products instead. Number four, making wine in huge quantities keeps production costs low. Yeah, well, that makes sense. Bronco makes an impressive 90 million gallons of water a year. Little wineries need to get high prices in order to be able to make wine in small quantities. But you make a better wine in a 700,000-gallon tank than you can in a 700-gallon tank. Gallon one, because there is less exposure to air and oxygen in the enemy, and that's the enemy to winemaking. I've seen some 1 million gallon tanks. Oh my gosh, they were enormous. And there's quite a few of those floating around in California too. 1 million gallon tanks. The company uses machines to harvest the grapes, which keeps the cost low, but it also increases the chance of bad grapes ending up in the wine. Everything is automated, which also helps keep the cost down. Mass-produced wine typically has higher amounts of residual sugar and added grape concentrate to mask the taste of inferior grapes, therefore sugar water claim. Critics argue that mass production is also how animal matter can end up in your wine glass. But, you know, let's think about that. That could happen to anything on an agricultural level. If you worry about things like that, you shouldn't be eating anything. You shouldn't drink anything, says friend, or says Bronco owner, told CNBC. When the wine's fermenting, they're going to eliminate anything that's possibly there. Five, Bronco cuts shipping costs by using lightweight bottles and cheap cartons. Bronco was a pioneer in using lightweight bottles. The lighter glass reduces the weight of a glass of wine by several, of a case of wine by several pounds, meaning they can ship it more at a time. They've also lowered the cost of its shipping cartons by a few pennies by replacing the white paper it was using with a light brown paper, which brown paper is a little bit cheaper than white. And those are the five reasons why Bronco can sell their $2 chuck or $3 chuck for the price that they do. Which, if you think about it, that's it. And, you know, I don't think I've ever had a bottle of $2 chuck or $3 chuck. I think, thinking back, I don't think I've ever, because we don't have Trader Joe's here in Florida. Do we have Trader Joe's in Florida? I don't think we do, and so therefore, we may have them. We're going to check that out. But never had a bottle of $2 chuck or $3 chuck. People all the time have told me about it, but I've never had one personally. So there you go. That's how you, $1.99 for a bottle of wine. Exciting. That's our program for tonight. Well, let's see. Do I? Oh, maybe something else. There's one other thing I want to talk to you about here before we sign off. Told you I'd end up filling an hour probably anyway, and I just did. Where is it? A couple of things. We were talking about the heat wave hitting California and different areas of the country here and all that. Oh, I said earlier too, and let me back up. Not only Texas is having a lot of rain, but Missouri is having a lot of rain. My sister and I were talking the other day. She lives just outside of Kansas City, and she said they're getting lots of rain. And they're friends with some wineries up there, and they said that they talked to them, and they're saying that the rain is really, really starting to get to the vineyards, but not yet, because they're not getting anywhere near harvest, but they can't go out there and work the vineyard with tractors and stuff. Same thing as Texas, but the rain is affecting other areas. Heat wave in Europe. The Bordeaux region is experiencing some severe heat, as is Burgundy region over the weekend. This past weekend, a lot of rain. They're comparing it to 2003 heat wave that went across the country 12 years ago, and it killed a lot of people and all sorts of damage. The champagne growers said that they're not concerned at present. It's not really something that has been to the point where it's affecting them. But the September heat wave in 2014, Burgundy was an issue, which they pulled out of. The Champagne 2011 harvest was an issue also. So the heat is affecting not just us, but this is out of Decanter magazine, by the way. Heat is not just affecting us, but it is also affecting the different areas in France. One particular winery who does biodynamic farm winery, the Chateau Palmer in Bordeaux, says that the only thing to do is to do nothing. That's the grapes will take care of themselves. So we'll see. But an issue with heat in the Bordeaux region. And what is it? And then we go to Chile. And Chile has an issue. No, I don't want that. Continue to the article. Chile has an issue with drought. Northern Chile is experiencing some severe drought right now. California's water issues have dominated the news cycles recently, but Central Valley in the Southern Hemisphere, the Northern Chile's Lamari and Elqui Valleys have been dealing with their own severe drought for several years now, and it's impacted the vintners. Most grapes grown in those areas are destined for pisco distillers, while some are table grapes. But as Chile's wine market is growing, these areas are being used for making more grapes, and the growers rely on the rainfall and reservoir-filling snowmelts from the Andes. But the last 3 years have brought an annual average rainfall of 1 inch with little to no snow, a major issue down there. Chile's northernmost Appalachian reports that their situation is slightly better than the Mar Valley, which is in the Elqui Valley, but that whole area is hurting. It's really, really hurting. They're drilling deeper wells and trying to salvage everything. They're 6 months ahead of us. Remember, they're below the equator, so they're 6 months ahead of us on their well, the northern Chile probably isn't, is it? I'm going to have to check a map. I might not be. But multi-year drought with no relief in sight for northern Chile, the Elqui, Elqui, and the Limari, Limari valleys in northern Chile. So, wow. Something else. Strange weather patterns. Now we're done. That's the show for tonight. Thank you for listening. Thank you for tuning in. Hope you learned something. Hope you enjoyed it. And we do have a class this coming Sunday. If you are in the area and would like to attend the class, then give us a call at the winery. I'll be back in a minute and a half.
Hey, this is Mike. Coming up this Sunday at Florida State's Winery from 1 p.m. to 4 p.m. is another wine class. That's right. Wine Class at Florida State's Winery, featuring winemaker, vineyardist, cellar master, and tasting expert, Ron Hunt. He shares his experiences and educational knowledge of wine in a detailed 3-hour wine class. It's a lot of fun and a great way to learn something new about wine. Some of the topics that are covered include a brief history of wines, wine grape varietals, wine grape diseases, wine glass styles and uses, cork history, evolution, and uses, oak aging, wine tasting, and rating wines, and my favorite, of course, the sampling of wines and a discussion. It's a great presentation, and it's located in the Florida State's Winery Tasting Room. For more information and to RSVP, which we would recommend, please contact the winery at area code 813-996-2113. Again, Florida State's Winery is phone number 813-996-2113. Florida State's Winery is located at 25241 State Road 52 in Land O'Lakes, Florida. Don't forget wine class this Sunday from 1 p.m. to 4 p.m. at Florida State's Winery. See you there.
Thank you, Mike. Yes, so see you there. Give us a call. You can call us over the next couple of days, and we can get you scheduled for the class. We've got, I think, 6-8 people scheduled for this. I'm not sure. So, still got openings, though. If you're interested, come on out. No festival tomorrow, or Saturday, rather. I say tomorrow, Saturday. No festival Saturday, but the class is Sunday. Thank you for listening. Thank you for tuning in. And have yourself a great week. Enjoy a lot of wine. And I'll talk to you next week, which Mike should be back then. I don't know. He said he would. July 16th, next week. We'll see you then. Have yourself a safe and wine-filled week.
This concludes tonight's broadcast of All About Wine with your host, Ron, Vice President and General Manager of Florida State's Winery. Florida State's Winery is located at 25241 State Road 52 in Land O'Lakes, Florida, 4 miles west of Interstate 75 or east of US 19 and US 41. For more information on Florida State's Winery, visit the website at floridaestateswines.com or call area code 813-996-2113. The email address is corp@floon.com. That's corp@floon.com. For more information on All About Wine and future shows, please like us on Facebook at facebook.com/allaboutwinebtr or visit our website at allaboutwinebtr.com. Archived shows are available as a free download on iTunes and on our show page at blogtalkradio.com/allaboutwine. Thank you for listening. We'll see you next time on All About Wine.